Yeah, thank you very much for kindly inviting me here, and it's a great pleasure to be able to bring some, well, maybe interesting thoughts from Europe, maybe not. You will judge for yourself. When Jeff asked me to do an assessment of biochar production in Europe, I said, oh, am I going to get to the big bags of biochar being sold to a broad public or not? And I was a little bit reluctant and said, well, how am I going to address that? And the approach you had in mind probably was a little bit more top-down, and what I end up with is giving you a bottom-up approach. Because I had to refrain to, like Balwant did with the last example, to go to those things that seem to work. And so I'm going along these lines, and I apologize if you expected a top-down approach. So I'm going to just give you the facts first to get probably a bit rid of them. We have a small to medium scale biochar production, if I judge it between all these things I've heard today and the last days. Germany is the largest producer with roughly 6,000 tons, which is mostly EBC certified biochar. Australia has roughly 500, Switzerland 700, Great Britain the same. Italy is the second largest producer, and the others do not really have the large piece of the cake. So that's what it looks like. So, of course, I have to focus a little bit on Germany because there's a bit more, but also Austria and Switzerland. And it seems that people who are active in this area seem to be infectious to their surroundings, so that sometimes things spring up around a certain person. I started noticing that, and you might probably have encountered the same here. If we compare this amount of biochar, which is roughly, if you are gracious, 10,000 tons, if we put it into perspective to wood gasifier ash or wood gasifier char, then we are in the real low range, and this is even a low assessment for the European wood gasifier char production. Likely the number is larger. Only one of these char producers is EBC certified so far, because often these chars are loaded with PAHs. I think most of you know that. So, but nevertheless, I would like to couple it to what you said. We also need to explore how to make these byproducts into something valuable to be able to tap that resource of carbon. About one-third of the German charcoal production comes from one company. It's termed German Charcoal, GmbH. That's not very tricky name in that case. This is a company funded by a very colorful person, so to say. He was from the medical side, and he got excited by biochar and decided that he would go with his resources a little bit for going into the biochar area. And still, he's one of the large producers in Germany. So, but if we see that wood gasifier ash and the biochar, and then we put that just into perspective to the German charcoal imports, you know, I give you what we have. This is the amount of charcoal that's imported annually to Germany. And I was quite disgusted when I saw that, because we are importing from countries, maybe you can't read it, it's Egypt, Namibia, and Nigeria, where you would not expect them to be charcoal producers. So I think we should better go for the own resources and try to close the loops. And this is what normally biochar is doing. If you put that into a figure, it's a quite disgusting figure, so I quickly go to the next slide. So what is the causes for things that are hindering biochar to become something which is implemented, except from the things we have discussed now in this session? In the EU, we have got a lot of legislation problems, legislation rules that must be obeyed and things that must be harmonized. And in all except four EU countries, we have charcoal that can legally be used as soil improver or as compost or fertilizer additive. But mostly a definition is lacking on what charcoal is. So, in Germany, I've been talking to one of the guys being in the panel of deciding on what is allowed as a fertilizer additive, And he says, for me, charcoal is just 80% carbon. That's it. So you can't discuss with him that if you have, you know, the woody reminder from your green waste clippings and you're composting the more nutrient-rich part and pyrolyzing the rest, then you have got more twigs and bark and a bit of a tearing material, so you normally don't end up with 80%, maybe rather with 70%. So in his definition, that's not qualifying as charcoal, because you name it biochar, or in Germany you would say Pflanzenkohle. So that's also probably a bit of a problem, that we have a language, So then you are allowed to use clean charcoal if you do adhere to certain analytical protocols, as a feed additive for animals or as a food additive for humans. And I just want to show you what Burger King is about to launch in Japan. So that's really containing some of this E153, which is vegetal carbon. And then we end up with all these German, French, English naming problems. And I see Johannes grinning, because I think you can comprehend what kind of nightmare that is in the European countries with all these different names. So then we have granted this this European Biochar certificate also because a lot of the legislators are really concerned that they might allow something that might turn out to be at some stage harmful. So if we do not fulfill every tiny bit of any rule that's there for compost, for fertilizer, for whatever, they will not allow anything to be added. So that's maybe some kind of add-on problem we might have in Europe. So I thought I should mention that. So now I'm going to some examples that turn out to be working examples of starting biochar businesses. One of the companies that's really there for quite some time, and they have done a lot of development for clean production, that's Pyrec, and the Austrian company Sonnenerde, which is translated something like sun soil. So they are making compost and potting substrates and substrates for your green roof and things like that. And they bought one Pyrec reactor, and they had a lot of developing work to do and also a kind of groundbreaking legislation go through. But they now have the allowance to produce, and what they do, they have mainly as a feedstock fibers from cellulosic fibers from paper sludge make. It's paper sludge, a clean paper sludge, which is from the packing industry for food. So that's something they get, and by taking it, they get money for taking the sludge. So that is where they get most of their feedstock. They use a heat exchanger to use most of the heat to dry this material, and they buy something additional, that's grain husks in that example, to put it in on top. But that's how they are going to make the production happening from sustainable waste feedstock, which is not, you know, as you said, where do we get where the biomass is from. So they found a way around that. So that's probably interesting. He received some prizes from the Austrian government with his idea for this kind of business, and it's going to work out. I was talking to him just before this conference, and he told me that in 2013 and 14 he was more or less at a black zero, but he knows now where to turn the tides in his products and production pathways, so he's expecting to be really on the earning side in 2015, and that's just a picture from what he's going to produce. Another interesting example is about botanical garden. This is more an R&D project, but a project trying to get things going in kind of local waste stream management. They have got 22,000 plant species, 43 hectares. I converted that to acres. I looked it up yesterday night. And about 2,000 cubic meters. I don't know what this would be in this other unit, but you tell me afterwards, of green waste, roughly. So what they did actually was they had to pay a lot of money to get rid of that green waste, and then they had to buy peat and peat substrates and compost. So they had to offer, again, money for getting those. And the project is actually about taking all the green waste and sometimes also the resources from all the toilets here, to that's an envisaged thing. It's not happening now, but they want to do that in the end, and try to make biochar substrates from it, and a lot of biochar substrates. So the project is about, this is a normal compost, that's the biochar compost, you can see the different colors, and to fit all of the different plant needs, because they have a lot of a broad variety, plants that need acidic soil, plants that need kind of tropical potting substrate, and they are now trying to figure out what kind of substrates they can make with these different biochar approaches. What you can see here is a papaya plant, and that's just the height, so the height is often showing less than the biomass is showing, so this is a control, and these are always, the yellow are always substrates with 15% biochar inside, and the green are products with only the compost, without the biochar. And here you can see a biochar compost plant, and that's the control plant in front, just to get an impression what the height meant. So that's also kind of example what could work out in the end, that you try to close a waste stream loop. Then we have another area in Germany, at least, that's huge sludge pyrolysis. Or in Germany we have something else which is called hydrochar making, but I'm not going to talk about that one. We have often very small units, so we have often rural communities below 100,000 or 50,000 inhabitants. So we need smaller scale plants or facilities to deal with the waste. Normally it's going into incineration or into agricultural use, but in Germany the law has been changed, so that's just a tiny part of Germany, so here you can see up to 70% of agricultural use, but this will not be allowed any longer. From next year on, alternative pathways of usage have to be thought, and the problems are that are piling up, there is a lot of antibiotics into them, heavy metals, and it needs to be hygienic, so this is why they do not allow longer that it's used agriculturally. But there's a lot of phosphorus inside, and we want to have that phosphorus. It's a secondary resource. Phosphorus stocks are running short globally, so if you do pyrolysis, you end up with an apatitic form of phosphorus, which is normally not plant available. That was a funded R&D project. I was a little bit part of that, just with the biotox testing for if these trials are okay. And in this project, they largely solved the problem. I'm just going to show you some results, which Kevin Friedrich has kindly sent me. It's from his PhD work. So this is triple superphosphate in increasing amounts from zero to full fertilization, all other factors held constant. Then this was also lime to mimic the biochar, or the sewage char, I should say. And here you can see different kind of sewage sludges that had been turned into chars, and this is the ryegrass biomass, and the same was done with maize. And it seemed that they can get fairly to almost 100% plant availability of the phosphorus by steering the process in such a way that the pea gets out again. Another example where farmers took things into their own hands, and they did not wait for us to tell them what to do, this is in the Rosenheim area, this is close to Munich. These farmers are a little bit behaving like Asterix and Obelix in their small village, and the Bavarian farmers are a bit special, and maybe you can confirm that. They founded a kind of round table in 2008 and meet every few months and exchange a lot of experiences on what they have seen. And they started in 2008 treating manure and using the biochar as a kind of bedding additive and as a seed additive. And not only the biochar, but also lactobacilli. There's a product which is derived from Japan and bokashi making. It's called effective microorganisms, and I often say it's sauerkraut juice, so it's a lot of assortment of lactobacilli. And they start treating all these enriched components with this stuff, you know, with a biochar, and only small dosages. You don't need large piles of biochar to treat the manure. And also with the acidifying bacteria, which really seem to turn this manure into something else. This guy is the man who invented that, but they don't actively search for researchers, because in their first encounters must have been with some arrogant person, so they did not they did not really want the contact. Now they are more open, and I'm going to approach them a little bit more. They told me they use actually 500 tons of biochar, and several hundred farmers do it actually. They are smaller scale than you are used to probably. This is a recipe, I'm not going to dwell on that, what they told me, what they mostly do. And this ends up with 150 kg of biochar per hectare per year. So that's not a large dose. That's just what's in the manure. And they produce also some kind of black planting soil and earth. And what I'm showing here, I was reluctant if I should show it, it's so-called gray literature. It's from a student's work, which he had done here. And what he found actually by different kinds of manure treatments, that the manure treatments where they used the microorganisms, rock powder and biochar, or just without the rock powder, they had the largest yield increase in the grass canopy forage, what they cut three times a year, and mostly, they get the largest savings here. And so the most of the end that was recovered was in these treatments. And it seemed to work out in that way that the farmers really buy it, because they are really normally not spending money on what's not, so thank you. So I'm just showing some things which are more gray than real scientific literature, just to give us ideas. They use it as bedding material. This is just a kind of questionnaire that persons did there. They put it in the slurry or manure treatment and observe, this is really important, reduced smelling. So it smells like, I've been there, it smells like you go into a forest but not into a cattle stable. And the consistency is improved and all this kind of stuff. So what they observed here is sometimes that they use it as a feed additive. So the big question is if free-ranging animals would ever use that or eat that, but in fact they do and they like it very much. You even need to take it away. This is kind of a product that a Swiss company is producing. It's a carbon feed, so-called. There's only 15% of biochar inside, but there's a lot of fermented things also with more or less lactobacillic fermentation, and the company has doubled to tripled its production each year, so people keep rebuying it, so it seems to give them some benefits. So this kind of feed additive seems to be good for suppressing illnesses. That's where the value comes from, you know, that you don't have to order the veterinarian to come to your livestock. So does it matter? Back of the envelope. In Germany, well, if you have 1% of biochar in animal farming, you would end up compensating 0.6% of the annual emissions. If you go for Ireland, where livestock farming is much more important, you would be able to compensate more. So I think, even though it seems tiny, we should not completely neglect such a pathway, because in our European country, this is where the biochar is at the moment really going to. That's where it's sold, where it's paying its price in a kind of cascading use, because if you have it as a bedding additive and absorption and interception of nutrients, it has paid its cost already when it goes to the soil. So that might be just some kind of giving us some ideas. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.